The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the final J-Talk Podcast of the 2020 J1 season. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, it definitely was a marathon and a sprint. Looking forward to running the rule over the final furlong with you, even though a Saturday's final day, I guess, ended up being a bit of an anticlimax after a second place was decided last Wednesday.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I mean, Gamba wrapped it up pretty reasonably comfortably in midweek, so we're only left with the three teams, and then all three teams were a little bit nervy, I thought, for most of Saturday, but thankfully the league doesn't disappoint, and the last 15 minutes of the two games we're about to come on to were absolutely fantastic, and it was a fairly fitting way to end the season. I just took a huge sigh of relief after it and went to bed. I thought, yeah, because it's been one of the weirdest seasons I think anyone will ever cover.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. From start to finish after the restart, yes, it's just been helter-skelter. And, you most definitely deserve a lie down, Sam, after all the hard yards you've put in over the course of this truncated season. And, yeah, as you mentioned, there definitely were late fireworks at both the Toyota Stadium and also the Kashima Soccer Stadium on Saturday that we'll come on to shortly. But first, yeah, we'll wrap up the six games from last Wednesday that had to be played in match day 33. You might remember, listeners, from last week's episode, we mentioned that Nagoya and Kashima, who were still in the running for the ACL places, had the midweek off. And Nagoya obviously are hoping for a slip-up from Gamba Osaka when they headed to Yokohama FC in the battle for second spot. But Shu Kurata put any Gamba nerves to bed, Sam, after just 24 seconds. Quite a way for Gamba to get things up and running at Mitsuzawa.
Yeah, it kind of goes without saying that it's the perfect start, and they really did need that in that game, because Yokohama have proven in various games this season that they are a tough nut to crack, so to be able to get that goal and a bit of a cushion was really helpful, because for the rest of the game, until they kind of sealed it late on, Yokohama were pressing, they caused a few issues, so without that early goal, it would have been a really nervy Wednesday evening for Gamba, but yeah, they set themselves on their way perfectly, and they allowed themselves to just about be able to manage that game and, yes, see it out with relative comfort.
Indeed. So, yeah, it ended up being a 2-0 away win for Gamba, with the second goal coming in just inside the last 10 minutes. The homekeeper, Yuji Rokutan, had saved from Shu Kurata and Kazuma Watanabe before Patrick stabbed home from inside the 6-yard box to continue his purple patch at the end of the season. So that left Cerezo Osaka still interested in the race for the second spot, although they were definitely behind the eight ball after Gamba's win, and they were out of it entirely after a fairly disappointing 2-1 home defeat at the hands of Tosu, who have definitely finished the season with a wet sail. And, when you think about ways to score your first J1 goals, Sam, I think Yuta Higuchi has, he hasn't topped the list or anything like that, but he's certainly done it in a pretty spectacular fashion in the 22nd minute of this game here, putting Tosu 1-0 up with a brilliant free kick from just outside the box. A direct free kick on goal from an angle when everyone, including their Cerezo goalkeeper Kim Jin-hyun, was expecting a cross.
Yeah, I think he's been taking lessons from Riki Harakawa, who's pretty decent with a dead ball as well. And yeah, it was a terrific free kick. It's going to be one of the best goals he scores in his career. And it was, yeah, a real hammer blow at the time for Cerezo, who hadn't started very well. Tosu were a team that have been in form recently. They've compounded everyone's real expectations with the way they've been able to play in this kind of last couple of months of the season, and this was a perfect start for them. Higuchi has looked a good player, and is one of the various youngsters that Tosu have got coming through that they've kind of been forced to play, but he's really taken it on, and yeah, he deserved his goal the way he's played really for the last couple of months as well. I mean, he's got various different positions. He's played holding midfield, he's played central midfield, he's played out on the wing. And yeah, he's brought a lot to that team. And now if he can add free kicks to it in the manner that he did here, yeah, they've got a decent little player on their hands there, Tosu.
Most definitely. So a good start for the visitors. The other two goals in this game came at the end of either half. A minute before half-time, Yuta Toyokawa drew Cerezo level when he fired home from the edge of the box. But late drama here in the 89th minute. An off-balance, Koji Suzuki failed to score from 6 yards for the home side. And then in the first minute of stoppage time, Tosu won it when Thiago Alves lashed in a superb finish to finish off a Tosu counter-attack. So, yeah, Gumba wrapped up second on Wednesday. And, Sam, a disappointing way for Cerezo to conclude their interest in the battle for second. Of course, they were occupants of second spot for a fair whack of this season. But as we've said several times in recent weeks, and you've just mentioned as well, Tosu deserve huge credit for their performances at the end of the season. So it's a bit of yin and yang, I think, after this game. But yeah, I mean, Cerezo, they'll be ultimately very frustrated not to have continued the battle for second into the final day.
Yeah, there are plenty of times early in this season when I kind of, even offhand, I'd just say, oh, it's a Sagam Tosu, a team has to go and beat them. And it's not really the case, and it's unfair on Tosu. They have played very, very well, and they're a difficult side this season for anyone to face. So Cerezo knew they were going to be in for a game, but they didn't really play well at all. They didn't come out of the blocks in this one. And to still be in the game and to have that chance at the end through Suzuki, I mean, glorious chance. It was almost like a get-out-of-jail-free card they had. Yeah, and he'll be so disappointed that he missed that. Toyokawa went off injured just after half-time. They'd lost Bruno Mendes, so you're kind of forced to play Suzuki up there, who's barely had any football this season. So, yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't the man you wanted the chance to fall to. And Tosu themselves, they reacted very well to that near miss, went up the other end to win the game. And yet, full credit to them, full credit to the manager. I think if you're going to look at manager of the year, I know Oniki will probably get that quite comfortably, but the job that Kim has done, bar the incident with the COVID scare, I think he's been absolutely fantastic and deserves a lot of credit.
Most definitely. And it'll be really interesting to see how Tosu start the 2021 season. I think if they can carry on the momentum that they've built up at the end of this campaign, then, yeah, they'll be comfortably mid-table, I would imagine, next season with, yeah, a lot of very good young players coming through. So that was an excellent result for Tosu on their travels on Wednesday. And elsewhere last midweek, the champions Kawasaki played the final home game of their amazing season, and they came from behind to beat Urawa 3-1. Shinzo Kuroki put Reds in front with his 10th goal of the season from the penalty spot in the 11th minute. That's the 9th straight season he's been in double figures in goals in J1, a terrific record for Kuroki. But in typical Kawasaki fashion, Sam, a glut of goals, 3 in 8 minutes it was, wasn't it, saw them turn this game on its head. The first was a brilliant 25-yarder from Hidemasa Morita to mark his first J1 goal, just as impressive as Higuchi's was in the Tosu game. That's 80 appearances it took Morita to get his first goal, but yes, it was well worth the wait, an absolute belter indeed. Then they went bang, bang, bang. Kaoru Mitoma headed in his 13th goal of the season, a week, of course, after Sam said he couldn't head the ball. So, again, we've provided inspiration for J-League players seemingly on a weekly basis as we conclude the season. Sam, that was from Miki Yamane's cross in from the right. And then Yu Kobayashi made it 3 in 8 minutes when he turned in Kengo Nakamura's no-look cross in the 61st minute. So, I guess business as usual for the champions. So, Sam, we wondered last week if they were finishing the campaign on in a bit of a lull. But I don't know whether Reds have stirred them to life here or they just decided to put on a proper show for the home fans in their home finale.
Yeah, maybe it was Kengo Nakamura's last home league game. They wanted to put on something. They didn't really start that well, and Kuroki got their goal. And, yeah, give credit to him for a fantastic record that he's got. I mean, it's not necessarily been his or Red's best season, but he's still there to score goals. And, yeah, he's been a terrific player. But, I mean, Frontale just do what they do best, the kind of blitz that they do in scoring in bursts. It's not the first time they've done it this season. It can't be a fluke. They just keep going. And, yeah, once they get the bit between their teeth. They're very difficult to stop. I mean, in the first half, they had a lot of possession and chances, but Reds actually defended quite well, which is rare for them. But, yeah, eventually Frontale broke through. I think Morita's goal was fantastic. It's I think it's only Noborizato of kind of the main starters for the team this season that hasn't scored this season, which is pretty incredible the way they've managed to spread all their goals around. And, yeah, then what can I say about Mitoma? There's nothing he can't do now after he can head the ball. So that was great. And then it was nice to see Kengo Nakamura get an assist in his final game. I think they were definitely trying to set him up for a goal, as well as Mitoma, because he's levelled the record for most goals in a rookie season. Didn't manage to break that record at the weekend, but yeah, terrific for him. And it was just a kind of perfect way for Frontale to end their season at home. Just showed how good a team they have been all year. And in the end, it was a very comfortable outing.
Rightio then. So in fact, in the six games last Wednesday, Kawasaki were the only team to win at home. So the other three games all ended in away wins as well. In the snow at the Edion Stadium, Kashiwa beat hosts Hiroshima 1-0 when Michael Olunga ran onto Hiroto Goya's through ball from inside his own half, strode through on goal and stroked home a lovely left-footed finish past Keisuke Osako in just the 17th minute, while the interest late on in this game was when Hiroshima manager Hiroshi Jofuku was shown two yellow cards in quick succession by the referee and sent to the stand. So obviously Jofuku fancied getting to the beach a week earlier than his players. So yes, he wasn't involved in Hiroshima's final match of the season on Saturday. And the other two games ended with Oita beating Shonan 2-1 away, and Sendai rose off the foot of the table with their 3-2 away win over Shimizu. The last game, Sam, the Shimizu Sendai game, some absolutely brilliant goals in this game, and probably the pick of them, although it's certainly one that the S-Pulse goalkeeper Takuo Okubo will not want to see back again, was when Takuma Hamasaki gave Sendai the lead for the third and ultimately the final time in the 86th minute with a free kick from all of 35 yards that completely embarrassed Okubo, who was set up to his far post, obviously expecting the free kick to be crossed into the centre for a Vegalta head to hopefully connect with. But Hamasaki saw all that space at the near post and just lashed in from 35 yards. It was spectacular to see, but as I say, Okubo will definitely not want to see any replays of that.
Yeah, any time that happens, you always have to question the goalkeeper first and foremost. And I still think he probably should have reacted a bit better than he did. But you've got to give all the credit in the world to Hamasaki. He spied the opening, he struck it very well, and he got his reward for it. And you see that every now and then, often it doesn't work, or you're made to look a bit foolish. But this is, yeah, perfectly executed. Okubo, I mean, yeah, you should be doing better. I think he, I don't know, he's not really covered himself in glory too much this season. He's not really had much of a chance. They played Umeda for a while, but yeah, I think the goalkeeping situation is a real issue at Shimizu that new manager Lottina is going to have to deal with next season. So that'll be interesting to see how he can form a defence out of this team who haven't been able to defend for the last few seasons. But yeah, this was poor goalkeeping for Shimizu, but it was a really good game. It was a nice end of season game. It's a shame that, well, not for these clubs, but for me, that there wasn't any relegation on the line, because this would have been an absolute cracker if they were still fighting out for relegation. But that wasn't to be, and maybe we'll see a bit of that next season. But yeah, a really good game, and Hamasaki, fantastic goal.
Most definitely. And well, speaking of Shimizu, I wasn't sure when we were going to be able to get around to talk about this, but so we might as well do it now, Sam. Yeah, you've just mentioned that Lottina is leaving Cerezo Osaka, which you've known about for a few weeks now. And it appears certain, or it has already been confirmed, I'm not sure as we record on Monday night Japan time, that Miguel Lottina will now head to Nihon Daira and become the new manager of Shimizu S-Pulse. So I can't think of too many more shifts in philosophy in the space of 12 months for a front office to undertake. First appointing Peter Klimovsky, the Australian, obviously, who has worked extensively under Ange Postecoglou, and obviously Shimizu appointed him knowing full well Klimovsky's history and the sort of football they would expect from him. Well, that obviously didn't last too long. It didn't last the full season, obviously, for Klimovsky. And then to shift your focus so drastically, well, not completely in the opposite direction, but, a vastly different philosophy in appointing Latina, Sam. So for any S-Pulse supporters listening, what can they expect next season, and how drastic a change do you think it will be?
Oh, it's completely the opposite, really. I mean, Klimovsky's, the way he was playing, it was all about kind of individual expression. They're all going to take risks. very fluid going forward at every opportunity, leaving themselves a little bit open at the back, or quite a bit open at the back as it was. And Latina will do none of that. It will be all about organisation. Everyone will have their set individual roles. You have to do that role. You can't go out of that. And no, Souza was there. He was a fantastic player for Cerezo, but he was a bit too flamboyant for Latina. He wouldn't necessarily do exactly what he was told, and he was out of there. So the players are going to have a rude awakening, because it's going to be completely different to what they've been dealing with. It's going to be interesting, because the personnel there are not good enough to play in the Latina way, I don't think. Yeah, he's going to have, you expect he'd have a little bit of backing to get his own players in, and he's definitely a hard taskmaster, so he'll try and get that team really regimented. I think, just looking at it, with the four relegation spots, I think ideally they might want to play a really attacking way and a nice brand of football, but they think going the Latina route and just being organised might be the best route just to survive next season. I think that might be what they're going for. He's a very good manager, Latina. You might not like the way his team plays, but he does very well. He did well at Verdi, and then obviously at Cerezo. I don't think he should have been sacked from Cerezo. I thought he'd had a very good couple of seasons. So I think it's a good coup for Shimizu, but it's going to be very interesting to see how that team flips from one style to the other.
Yeah, it should be absolutely fascinating. And in other managerially related news, I'm not sure if it's been confirmed yet, and in fact I'm pretty sure it hasn't, but I have it on very good authority that once Tokushima Vortis's involvement in the Emperor's Cup is concluded, either at the quarterfinal, semi-final or final stage, that will be the end of Ricardo Rodriguez's involvement at Tokushima, and he is 99.9% certain to be taking over in the dugout at Saitama Stadium, taking over Urawa Reds, a huge task for any manager, but Rodriguez has certainly drawn rave reviews with his work down in Tokushima, and obviously has a J2 title from this season to show for it. So Tsuyoshi Otsuki is out, Sam. Some Red supporters might say that's a year too late, but obviously Otsuki was rewarded for getting Reds to the ACL final last year despite a pretty ordinary league campaign. So while we're on the topic, I suppose, what do you know about Rodriguez, and what might he bring to Reds, and what might he bring out of some of their squad of, very, very good players?
Well, he's a manager, and like Otsuki, that actually has a plan and has a way of playing, and he sticks to that, and he'll make sure his team know that. The kind of Urawa for the last year or so, they've just been kind of going through the motions, and they really need a shake-up, and this will definitely give them that. I think they kind of rested on their laurels. You kind of knew who would play every game. So I think there's going to be a bit of a shake-up. There's various links to a lot of J2 players. I know Masaki Watai from Tokushima, a very good midfielder, is one that's been linked to join Rodriguez at Reds. So it's going to be fascinating to see what sort of players they get in. And as long as he's given time over pre-season to kind of bed in this new style, it's going to be, I don't expect instant results at Reds, but I think if they give him patience, I think there's definitely a route forward for Reds, for them to get back to challenging towards the top of the table. He's done fantastically at Tokushima. They are always, for the last few seasons, they've always been the best team to watch, and I'm sure Reds fans will appreciate that. But they're also, he's got a proven record of winning with Tokushima as well, so hopefully he can bring that to Reds. I just think they'll be quite happy to just move away from Otsuki, because really that team was going nowhere. So at least this is a positive step. It looks like the board have identified someone that with a plan to go forward. So I look forward to it. I think it should be really interesting to watch Reds next season, and it really hasn't been for a couple of years.
All right, then. So thanks for that. Any more managerial-related news or indeed scuttlebutt before we move on to the games from Saturday? I'm not sure if it's been announced, but the Vegelta Sendai parted ways with their manager, Takashi Kiyama?
Yes, he was told that he was leaving before the final game. I don't think I've seen a replacement for him yet, but I think he really had to go. They went through a whole season without winning at home. Yeah, it's just not really good enough. And the former Vegelta manager has joined Renofa Yamaguchi today, so as a big pickup for them. And the only other managerial thing I can think of is a great comeback at Cerezo Osaka. I mean, he's only been there three times before, but Levia Kulpi is back. And, it didn't really go well at Gamba a couple of years ago, so it's going to be very interesting. They've been trying to bring Shinji Kagawa back as well, but he released something on his Twitter that said he's still got unfinished business in Europe. What that is, I don't know, because he's not had a club for 6 months. But I don't know. This is going to be a mess, I think, Cerezo. I don't really like what they're doing. They've brought in Ryosuke Shindo, though, so he's one of my favourites, so it's not all bad. But, watch Cerezo with interest. I don't know what's going to go on there.
Yeah, fair enough. Actually, thinking about Sendai, Stuart Smith's J2 news dump that he put out for our patrons on Monday afternoon, there's mention in there that perhaps Makoto Tegaramori might be heading back to Vegelta. So that's unconfirmed, obviously, as we record on Monday night. But that's a rumour swirling around. And I think there was some surprise that he had left Nagasaki. But, perhaps that's to return to his spiritual home. We shall see Vegelta search for a successor for Takashi Kiyama, who we'll come on to very shortly. His team had a pretty unwanted record this season in terms of home games won, and I'll probably just spoil that. But anyway, we'll come on to Sendai's game later on as we run through Saturday. But that's Wednesday and our managerial scuttlebutt section of the podcast wrapped. So we might just take a very quick break, and then we'll come back and run through all 9 games from Saturday's match day 34. Welcome back. So after Gumba locked up second spot on Wednesday night, the main interest in Saturday's final round of the season was which team would finish third to guarantee a Champions League football in 2021. So all 18 J1 teams took to the pitch on Saturday, the first time since match day 23 in mid-October that all teams had played on the same weekend, indeed on the same day. So Nagoya were in the box seat for third, knowing that a win at home against Hiroshima, minus their manager Hiroshi Jofuku, of course, would guarantee them a third spot, as they sat a point ahead of Cerezo and two clear of Kashima, with a goal difference advantage over both, with those two teams facing off at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. And Grampus just about held up their end of the bargain, Sam. A 1-0 win for Grampus over Hiroshima, although there were definitely nervy moments. But ultimately, with 5 minutes left, the substitute Naoki Maeda, who is capable of the spectacular, he certainly fired in a brilliant goal, a rasper from the edge of the box that flew into the top corner and sealed third place and ACL football in 2021 for Grampus.
Yeah, he did. A magnificent goal from him. It was a touch of class that the game definitely needed and Nagoya needed. It was, touch back to him, left-footed, into the top corner. No chance for Hayashi in goal. It was a terrific effort. But the game really was one of the ones that Nagoya have played a lot in recent weeks, where it's kind of tight, not really a lot's happening. They've struggling without really... Well, Kanazaki's been out injured. They've been playing Gabriel Xavier up there, then he was suspended. So Yamasaki was in. He doesn't really offer too much, to be honest. His movement's not really there. He's not a great finisher. And Yeah, his link-up play is not very good either, so there's not a lot to write home about Yamasaki, and they weren't really connecting with him, they weren't really creating anything. If anything, for most of the game, I thought Hiroshima were the better team. Araki hit the crossbar for them, then Langerak made a very good save low from Hayao Kawabe, so yeah, so Freche for long periods looked slightly the better team, but it did seem to be petering out to 0-0, but yeah, a little bit, a touch of class is what was needed for Nagoya. They got that. So full credit to them and congratulations on their qualification for next season's Asian Champions League.
Most definitely. So obviously Maeda's taken the headlines here, Sam, but ultimately I think for him, it's going to be, at the end of the day, it's going to be considered a fairly wasted season, isn't it, for him? He had obviously those four goals in the one game, but apart from that, he's really struggled for his bread and butter, which he had become a very reliable goal scorer. But I don't know, did he feel the effects of the crowded schedule this season, or did he just have an off season, perhaps, that he might be able to bounce back and... Well, obviously, the new season is going to be starting fairly soon, so hopefully this goal will be fresh in his mind throughout the preseason. He might be able to jumpstart 2021 on the back of a spectacular goal like this.
Yeah, I think he's a bit of a streaky player, and I think last season he benefited from Mateus being over on loan at Yokohama, so a lot more kind of went through him. Now, when Nagoya attack, it is usually through Mateus. He's the one that is at the heart of everything, and Maeda, he's not really got as much of a look in. He's kind of switched his positions a few times, played out on the right. He's kind of played as this false nine occasionally when there's the strikers have been injured, and yeah, he's not really got into games as much as he can do. And I think there's definitely quality there. I don't know if it's just a confidence issue with him, and it needs something like this to spark that. But yeah, he's not really been great, really. I don't know why. The whole team has kind of relied on Mateus and all just looked and turned to him and think, are you going to be able to do something? And yeah, him, Maeda and Sommer as well. I really liked Sommer, and he's still a very good player, but he hasn't really contributed enough in terms of goals and assists this season. So yeah, those two really need to step up next season, especially going into the Champions League. But yeah, I think... Yeah, it was a great goal from him, but yeah, his season has been a little disappointing.
Yes, I agree with that, and yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what they do with their squad with Asian Champions League involvement guaranteed for next season. So congratulations to Grampus. They left it late, and Sam mentioned Araki hit the woodwork for Sun Freche, and sure Inagaki did as well for Grampus just after half time. But yeah, Maeda won it in spectacular circumstances, and then of course the clean sheet, Sam, Nagoya winning 1-0. It completed a remarkable season for Mitch Langerak and his defence as they set a new J1 record with their 17th clean sheet of the season, breaking a tie they had heading into the game with Shusaku Nishikawa and the 2014 Urawa Reds defence. I think it's safe to say, and you'll agree with me, Sam, that this record had snuck up on us. I was doing some fact-checking on Friday at work for, the players that we discussed for as nominations for player of the season for the three clubs that we've got left. And, just scrolling through all of Grampus's results and adding up all the clean sheets, I was stunned when I got to 16 on Friday. And, they've made it 17, which is, I'm not great at maths, but I believe 17 is half of their games in the J1 season. So that's simply remarkable, isn't it? And I think that's perhaps making us rethink some of the decisions we have to make towards the end of this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. It is one that's kind of sneaked up on us. I think just Nagoya's games in recent times have just been fairly dull 0-0s, or they've just sneaked a 1-0 victory, so you don't really necessarily think about it. And it wasn't until, I think it was the Socceroos Twitter account that was praising Langerak, and I think that was at 15. I go, oh yeah, they have done very well. And to only concede 28 as well across the 34 games is, full credit to them. I think you've got to give the credit as well to the defence. I think Maruyama and Nakatani have done very well. They're very disciplined. Maruyama especially is a very good player. And the fullbacks as well. Ojo Suk came in. Yeah, he's done very well. He's not really going to go forward too often, but yeah, you can rely on him defensively. And Josh did the same at left back. So it was a kind of a team effort, but really Langerak has been a terrific goalkeeper all season. He's, in my opinion, the best goalkeeper in the league. Whether that means he's the goalkeeper of the year, we'll find out later. But yeah, he constantly makes very good saves. The one from Kalabe in this game is just another example. Right down low, he has to go at full stretch. It's a very good save. So yeah, terrific record for Grampus. And yeah, 17 clean sheets is, yeah, an incredible performance.
Most definitely. So yeah, Grampus finished the season with, on a run of six unbeaten, and the way the schedule worked out, they played five of their final six at home, with some of their games against the ACL clubs being rescheduled from late in the season to earlier on, before Kobe and the Yokohama F. Marinos headed off to Qatar. So yeah, congratulations to Grampus again for finishing third. So that left us with the battle for fourth then, I suppose, and obviously that will include ACL football if either Kawasaki or Gunma Osaka win the Emperor's Cup on New Year's Day. Of course, they have to negotiate a semi-final before they make it to the final. But so Kashima and Seneza Osaka faced off at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. Of course, at kickoff, they hope to take advantage of any slip-up by Nagoya, but we know, of course, that didn't happen. They played out quite an entertaining game at the Kashima Soccer Stadium with fireworks aplenty in the last 10 minutes. The best chance in the first half was created basically by the masked wonder, Everaldo, who blasted against the post in the 16th minute. But then after that, I think it's safe to say, Sam, that Cerezo had the better of the chances in the game, and they took a late lead when their halftime substitute, Riku Matsuda, stroked in an absolutely superb left-footed shot into the far top corner in the 83rd minute, only for that man Everaldo to cap off his brilliant second half of the season with his 18th goal of the campaign, blasting home a loose ball from the edge of the box in the 90th minute for his sixth goal in the final nine games. So we can come on to, obviously, what happened after that, because there was plenty happening in stoppage time, Sam. But, I mean, Everaldo, if you want to sum up the determination this fella has to score goals, I mean, there's about five players who could have got to that ball first, isn't there? And Everaldo was just not letting anybody else get there before him, and he absolutely blasted his shot home.
Yeah, you just have to watch the from the start of the move, when the ball is played forward, Everaldo knows it's not going to him, but he knows he's getting on the end of this. His anticipation is perfect. It drops to him. He makes sure he's in the right place. He just leathers it through past the goalkeeper. It's a terrific goal. I mean, we've spoken about Everaldo, it seems like every week for the last, like, two-thirds of the season. I think, yeah, he's just been magnificent. There were chances later on. There was a bicycle kick that he did as well. It was fantastic. It went just wide. But, yeah, I mean, he's got literally everything that you want from a striker. And, yeah, this goal was just about his anticipation, his will to get to the ball, his determination. And then when he gets there, the composure he shows just to place that in with the power that he manages to generate in what was really a side-footed effort. Yeah, terrific goal and a terrific player.
Yeah, so, if the 7 minutes between the Matsuda and Everaldo goals were entertaining, well, then the stoppage time absolutely went off. There's no questions asked. Everaldo, he tried a scissor kick that was blocked, and then Tomoya Inokai's follow-up was saved at close range by Kim. Then he wasn't finished yet, Everaldo. He tried a curler across Kim, but shot too close to the Cerezo keeper, with Ayase Wada seeing his follow-up of that shot saved by Kim at point-blank range. And when the ball was recycled in for another chance for Wada, he headed against the post with basically the last action of the game. So a frantic finale, Sam, and Kashima will be really disappointed they didn't ultimately win it. And in fact, their goalkeeper, Yuya Oki, was in tears at the full-time whistle, probably at the realisation that, Antlers will not be back in the ACL again next season. So for Cerezo, it's a fourth and the ACL playoffs if a J1 club wins the Emperor's Cup for Antlers, a fifth-place finish. And, I mean, you can't... We obviously want to judge teams and players for their performances, but, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, in a season like this, you can't be too harsh, I suppose, on both of these teams for where they've finished. They both finished in the top six. Antlers will be really frustrated they couldn't have snuck this at the death and ended up fourth. But, yeah, it was just one of those frantic finales, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Kashima, they paid for the slow start that they made. They took a while to adjust to the way Zago plays, and they didn't have time, really. With the games coming thick and fast, it's so difficult to have any time to work on anything in training. So I think they did very well, because considering they were towards the bottom, maybe about 6 or 7 games into the season, I think they've had a fantastic run to get where they have been. They will be disappointed, I think, in this game, even though they should have probably won it at the end with the way the header that hit the post. I mean, previously a very good double save from Kim. But the rest of the game, I don't think they played too well. I thought Cerezo with a better team, they had chances even before the Matsuda goal. Kakitani had two glorious chances, one-on-one with the main one. It was a good save from Oki. And the other one, I think he prodded over. But yeah, I thought Cerezo were the better team. And I think if they'd have lost 2-1, that would have been very harsh on them. But Kashima, they showed the desire that they have and the quality that they do have with those two strikers and the players behind them as well. It's a very good squad. If they can add to that, and then next season without the ACL distraction, and we don't know exactly what distraction that will be in the form that the ACL takes, whether they have to go off to another bubble to perform the group stage. It could be a slight blessing in disguise if they're going to challenge for the title next season to not have that. But yeah, I think besides that, it's like full credit to Cerezo. I know they were second for a long time, but really this squad, there's not a lot to work with besides Kiyotake and Sakamoto. It's not the strongest, I don't think. So for them to have finished fourth and to be pretty much in touching distance with an ACL place, I'd be very surprised if Tokushima or Blablitz Akito or whoever might get into the Champions League. So I think it's a very good season for Cerezo. They had that little dip just after they announced Lottner was departing, but they've managed to rally round and they've got the results that they needed, except for Wednesday night. So yeah, I think overall you have to say it's a very good season for Cerezo Osaka.
Yeah, completely agree, and that's very well said on Zago. Yeah, I mean, we wanted him out the door after 6 or 7 games, didn't we? It just looked like it wasn't going to work for them. But ultimately, do you think he's got a proper future there? Has he just let the players play, or have his methods slowly began to bear fruit over the course of the season? Sorry, we've obviously got a lot of games to move on to, but I mean, it is interesting, isn't it, that he has managed to turn things around and was, the width of a post away from finishing fourth and getting Antlers back into the ACL.
Yeah, well, really, for this season, it's kind of been a trial and error for him. He's tried various different little formations. You've seen Everaldo play left wing for a while, which did actually work as kind of a wide target man. He's kind of now settled on this kind of 4-2-2-2 formation where Doi and Alano kind of operate behind the two strikers, but it's all really fluid, and they've just got this wonderful understanding that they've managed to grasp in the last 2 months or so, and they look like a really good team. If they can keep this team together, maybe add 1 or 2 additions, probably defensively, I'd say, then they look like they could go all the way next season. It was just that Zago came in, they had this set way of playing with the previous managers, that it was always this 4-4-2 with the high wingers. You kind of knew exactly how Kashima were going to play. So for them to just... It wasn't a major switch, but it was just enough that it kind of knocked them a little bit, and they had quite a few new signings as well, I think it was like 6 or 7 they made in January, so it was kind of, they did need that few months of adjustment, and COVID definitely didn't help with that kind of the training that they'd need for that. So I just think it's taken them a bit of time, but once it's clicked, and they look a very, very good team.
All right, yeah, so another fascinating team to watch for 2021, Antlers, no question at all there. All right, so we'll move on to the games involving the teams that have finished in the top two. So, of course, next to the Panasonic Stadium, where Gumba Osaka came in to the final match of the season on a high after wrapping up second on Wednesday. And in a smaller pre-game ceremony, the club celebrated a Patrick's 200th J1 game and a Kazuma Watanabe's 350th. But visiting Shimizu spoiled the party after a goalless first half. Young S-Pol striker Ryo Kawamoto scored his first J1 goal 4 minutes after the break, staying just onside as El Seno shot off balance from the edge of the box, the ball finding him in stride before he composed himself and slotted past Masaki Higashiguchi. And then just past the hour, Shota Kaneko made it 2-0 after he wrong-footed two Gumba defenders in the box before firing in off Higashiguchi's right-hand post. So, a bit of a letdown for Gumba, no questions asked, Sam, after their 2-0 win themselves away at the Yokohama FC on Wednesday. This had all the hallmarks of an end of season game with both teams with nothing really on the line. But for S-Pulse, they obviously deserve credit for playing this game out. And they wanted to stay off the foot of the table. And a 2-0 win away at the team finishing second is a very good way to end their season.
Yeah, I thought they were the better team in this. I think Gamba, they'd sealed second, nothing was going to change. I think they took their foot off the gas a little bit. I think they made a couple of changes, not too many, but they never really got started in the game. And Shimizu didn't really in the first half either, but second half they were the ones that were putting the pressure on. They got a little bit of fortune with both goals. El Seno was a shot, it's not a pass. And it comes to Kawamoto, who, VAR in England would probably give him offside for an armpit hair. Yeah. But thankfully that was allowed to continue. It was a good finish. And then with the Kaneko one, I thought first time it was a fantastic touch away from Miura. But on second look, I think Yajima gets back, makes the tackle, which takes it away from Miura and sets up a bit of space for Kaneko. But a very good finish anyway. But it was a good performance from S-Pulse. They've done very well, actually, with the kind of caretaker manager that's in there now. They've still looked to attack. It's not really much of a divergence from the way they were playing with Klumovsky, so it's not really a setup for Latina's ways next season. But, it's good for them to have shown some spirit. And obviously, there's no relegation, but you don't want to be the team that finishes bottom in any season. So for them to have got off the bottom there, it's probably good for them psychologically. So, really good performance from them. And Gamba, I don't think they'll be too disheartened. Their focus will be on the Emperor's Cup.
Most definitely. So S-Pol's ended up in 16th in the table. And the champions headed to Hitachi Dai to face Kashiwa, and they found themselves in a 2-0 hole. Michael Olunga gave Raceol the lead in the 14th minute with the 28th goal of his remarkable season. Basically, he just bounced off Miki Yamane as they ran onto Cristiano's volleyed ball over the top. Olunga then took the ball around Jung Sung Ryong and finished from a tight angle. If you're keeping score at home, listeners, and I know you certainly are keeping score if you're one of our listeners from over in Kenya, you know that Olunga's 28th goal betters his tally from last season in J2 when he notched a 27 in 30, which of course was embellished by his 8 goals on the final day of the season. So all in all, he's had an absolutely remarkable season and basically much better against better competition in J1 this season. So Olunga, an absolute sensation, no questions asked. And then sensationally, Raceol went 2-0 up 17 seconds into the second half. Yusuke Sagawa blasted them 2-0 up after Kengo Kitazume's cutback from the byline. He'd gotten to the byline in the first place. Jeziel had blocked the ball, but the second time of asking, Kitazume sent the ball back across the box, and Sagawa very gratefully received that ball and blasted it home. But then, Sam, we talked about it on Wednesday, and then, the champions just went and went bang-bang again, didn't they?
Yeah, they do what they do best, really, don't they? They score goals in flurries, and they didn't rest on their laurels. When they were 2-0 down, it was an instant impact. Ianaga is not necessarily the player you expect to score a header from a corner, but it was a really nicely planted header, and they just got themselves right back into the game straight away, and then they kind of didn't look back from there. Although the second goal, Mr. Kim that's a few times now that he's made stupid mistakes, and I don't know what he's doing here. Wandering towards the edge of his area, he goes to clear it, but then kind of misses the ball, gives it to Mitoma, and then Damian has a tap-in from 20 yards. So, yeah, it's kind of a nice helping hand from Kim Sung-kyu, but yeah, but it comes from Kawasaki pressure, I suppose, and they really just got the bit between their teeth after that, and yeah, went on to pretty comfortably win it 3-2 in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Kim Sung-kyu thinks he's auditioning for the number one spot once Kosuke Nakamura's back fit at the start of 2021. I mean, he's really not doing his chances any harm at all, is he? Any good at all, sorry. With some of these mistakes he's made in the last few weeks. I mean, yeah, dropping the ball. Sorry, it escapes me who that was against. But yeah, I mean, that was a 1-0 loss, wasn't it, I think, for Raceol. And then, yeah, to look confident as you dribble the ball out of your own box and then, yeah, completely fluff your kick straight to an opponent 2 yards away from you. I mean, that's just... Yeah, that's just absolutely schoolboy stuff. So Frontale going bang bang. Akihiro Ienaga the first, and Leandro Damião the second. And then 10 minutes from time, Ienaga notched his 11th goal of the season after Kaoru Mitoma surged through the middle, and his ball out to Ienaga on the left took out three defenders before Ienaga dinked past Kim. There was some late flurry here from Raceol. They almost could have nicked a point at the death. Cristiano headed on a long ball from Kim in the 90th minute, and Hayato Nakama's volley hit the bar on its way over, and then Taiyo Koga dragged a shot wide. But ultimately, Frontale saw the game out to conclude their, frankly, record-obliterating season in some sort of style. They're at 26 wins, 83 points, 88 league goals, plus 57 goal difference, and their 18-point winning margin at the top of the table are all top-flight single-stage season records. An astonishing season under any circumstances, Sam, but to do it in a year like this is, it's frankly unfathomable.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how they've managed to be so consistent for so long. Every other team has had their peaks and troughs with the fixture schedule, but they've managed to rotate their team just enough to keep everyone relatively fresh. They've got terrific players in every position, and they've just managed to keep going. They've been the odd dip, but it's never really lasted for too long. And they came back for these last two games after a little dip after they won the title, and they've just shown what they're all about. The way that they can score goals in quick succession and really just take teams out of it is just a pretty incredible skill to have. And yeah, they've been an absolute joy to watch this season.
Yeah, so I think I just reeled off five records there, and I think all of them but one Frontale previously either held or held a share of. The only one that they didn't hold previously was the number of league wins in a J1 season that previously belonged to Kashima. Interestingly enough, actually in the season where they lost the league to Frontale on goal difference. That was Frontale's first league title in 2017. But now, yeah, I mean, there's obviously dozens of other records that they've created throughout the season, but those five ones could last for, and I've been banging on about this in the last couple of months, you probably remember, listeners, but yeah, these records could last for decades because this consistency is, it's just never been done before in J1. And whether Toru Aniki has actually turned his Frontale squad into footballing machines, well, we will wait and see in 2021, because what will they be able to do for an encore? They wanted to get their title back, and they have done it in the most emphatic way we have ever seen, frankly, in the history of Japanese football. So absolute kudos to Frontale. It obviously looked like it was going to be a great end to the season for Kashiwa Reysol, but yes, they were ultimately swamped. I think we're going to come on and talk more about Michael Olunga later, Sam, so we might park any more discussion about him until our awards section of the podcast right at the end. So we'll try and move through some of these games a little bit quicker, listeners. Yes, that's not my strong point. I'm well and truly aware of that. At Ajinomoto Stadium, two of the ACL clubs faced off. FC Tokyo hosted Kobe, and there was some controversy here. In the 27th minute, Kazuya Konno's in-swinging cross from the right was headed onto the bar by Joan Omari for the hosts. The ball appeared to bounce down over the line, but the linesman did not award the goal. On this day, Sam, it just appeared that Omari was a magnet for the ball when any set pieces were or crosses were played into the box for Tokyo. Just past the hour, Omari headed on a corner and Gotoku Sakai deflected Yojiro Takahagi's slight touch over the bar. Then up the other end for Kobe, shortly after, Kyogo Furuhashi's 25-yard curler came back off the intersection of post and bar. But 5 minutes from time, Tokyo won it with a goal straight off the training ground. Omari's dominance in the air at set pieces finally paid off. Hirotaka Mita sent a free kick from the left low to the front of the box rather than into the mixer. Kensuke Nagai stooped to flick it on with his head, and Omari sent a lovely header arcing over Daya Maekawa and into the net. So this had all the hallmarks of two teams just having a runabout at the end of the season, Sam. But, as a biased FC Tokyo supporter, I would say Omari was just about good value and deserved his goal.
Oh, absolutely. You were right. He was a complete magnet for it. Everything went to him. I think he's pretty dominant in the air. He was winning absolutely everything. I think this game, as you said, it was a bit of an end of season. It was an easy watch. It wasn't necessarily the greatest game in the world, but I thought Tokyo did edge it. They got unlucky with Omari's header that went, it did cross the line, but you could probably tell that in real time, maybe the linesman, it's difficult for him to be 100% certain that it crossed the line. It does bring into the question, why isn't there goal line technology? It's pretty easy to, it's worked almost flawlessly everywhere, unless you've got a load of Aston Villa defenders blocking the cameras, but otherwise, yeah, they would have cleared that up within seconds and Omari would have had the first of perhaps two goals on the day. But yeah, really good headers. Even the one that was cleared off the line was a good header. And then it was a nicely worked free kick for the winning goal. Nice flick on from Nagai and Omari again. Just they couldn't get to grips within the Vissel defenders. And yeah, I'm very happy for him because he's not had too much of a run of things this season. It's usually been Morishige and Watanabe as the centre-back pairing, but the move to bring Morishige into midfield that they started in the Champions League has given him a few chances, and I think he's taken that. I think defensively he's been pretty decent, and he's definitely a threat going forward.
Yeah, most definitely. It's just a shame that Morishige can't seem to pass the ball to his teammates when he plays in central midfield. Yeah. Otherwise, that move might become a semi-permanent. But yeah, hopefully Omari sticks around and he gets a few chances in the centre of Tokyo's defence in 2021. Or he could just be thrown on as an emergency striker, Sam, if Tokyo were chasing the game. Because as we've just said, yeah, he definitely likes to get his head on the ball in the attacking box. So yeah, we'll see what Kenta Hasegawa has in store for him in 2021, if indeed he does stay at the club. All right, so that was Tokyo finishing 6th and Kobe 14th. Of course, they made it all the way to the ACL semi-finals at Vissel, but ultimately falling to Ulsan, who claimed ultimate glory in the ACL. We probably should have mentioned that off the top, so congratulations to Ulsan for winning the ACL. Terrific stuff and a great achievement for the K-League side. All right, so on Saturday we did have a couple of derbies to chat about, Sam, and one of them was at Mitsuzawa, where Yokohama FC hosted Yokohama F Marinos and ultimately ran out deserved 3-1 winners. The hosts took a sensational early lead in just the 9th minute when left back Takaaki Shichi strode on to Koki Saito's square ball across the box and lashed in a first-time thunderbolt off the underside of the bar. Then after Kazunari Ichimi's low shot came back off the base of Yuji Kajikawa's right-hand post, Yokohama FC went 2-0 up in the 16th minute when their captain Masakazu Tashiro swept home from 6 yards after the F Marino's defence failed to clear a Kohei Tezuka corner. So, derby day at Mitsuzawa, and Yokohama FC got off to a rip-roaring start, no questions asked.
Yeah, they came out of the blocks. They looked like they were ready for this. It looked like kind of this had been the fixture they'd been waiting for a while. And yeah, they took full advantage of a slow start from Marinos, and the first goal, I mean, Shichi just strides onto this and absolutely leathers it in off the crossbar. A fantastic strike. No one was saving that. And then the second one, Tashiro has made quite a habit of being a nuisance from corners, and he's got a couple of goals recently. And I mean, he benefits really from pretty poor defending / goalkeeping. They all kind of converge on it and no one gets there, and it drops quite nicely for Tashiro. But yeah, he swiveled well and got his goal, and Yokohama FC really deserved that 2-0 lead at the time. I thought they put Marinos under a lot of pressure, and yeah, they were terrific. It kind of woke Marinos up and they were a little bit better, and the rest of the game was a lot more even. But yeah, the start was fantastic from Yokohama FC.
Indeed, indeed. And of course, they'd come in off the back of two decent performances, although the results hadn't been great. They'd held Nagoya very fortunately, of course, after the penalty controversy last weekend, and then played well, but yes, succumbed at home against Gumba in the game that saw their visitors seal second spot. So yeah, 2-0 to Yokohama FC in just the 16th minute, but 6 minutes later, Ado Onaiwu got F. Marinos back into the game when he tapped in from inside the 6-yard box after his initial scuffed shot came back off the post. Then after the break, the visitors well and truly gave the woodwork a good clattering. Daizen Maeda headed onto the bar, and Ken Matsubara curled a shot against Yuji Rokutan's left-hand post. But in the 73rd minute, Yokohama FC's substitute striker Yuji Senuma headed in a Tezuka corner to wrap up the points and give the hosts enough breathing room to give Kazuyoshi Miura a late cameo in the 90th minute, extending his J-League record for the oldest player ever that he sets. Well, he set it a couple of times in the last week, hasn't he, Sam? Because he came off the bench against Gumba as well. In their last attack of the game, F. Marinos hit the woodwork for the fourth time. Substitute Ryuta Koike's shot on the turn came back off the post. So ultimately, this result sees the Yokohama FC finish 15th and to F. Marinos 9th. I think I mentioned last week or the two podcasts ago, Sam, that yeah, F. Marinos, their defence of their title has been highly unsatisfactory, and indeed they've tied their own record for a single stage season for the worst performance by a defending champion. They won the title back in 2004 when it was contested over two legs, and then in 2005 that was the first season that was single stage, and F. Marinos, the defending champions, finished ninth that year, and well, they've just gone and repeated the dose. Of course, there are numerous caveats that we've hopefully tried to address throughout the season, so hopefully F. Marinos supporters don't think I'm having too much of a dig. But ultimately, on this afternoon, the Yokohama bragging rights belonged to FC.
Yeah, I think so. Yokohama F. Marinos were very unlucky with the charmed life that the FC goal was leading, and Rokutan as well made a few very good saves. So they would consider themselves unfortunate, I think, Marinos, not to get something from this game. But you've got to give a lot of credit to the way Yokohama FC have played in this game and throughout the season. They've kind of been a nice breath of fresh air. They've got a lot of good young players that have fortunately been given a lot of time this season. We've not had to watch the old men trot out every game, and yeah, so it's been really nice to watch them this season. It's going to be tough next year with the four relegation places, but they've got the experience that they've had this year will stand them in very good stead next season. So hopefully they can keep the majority of those young players and maybe keep Yusuke Matsuo, maybe think that his injury has kept him off for everyone else's radar and they can keep him for next season. But yeah, they've got a lot of good players there. Marinos, yeah, this season has been a really difficult one for them. Obviously, the Champions League and everything that we've gone on about for the last few months, next season will be a real test. I'm interested to see what they conjure up in the transfer window, whether they can keep Junior Santos there, who'd done so well since joining on loan from Kashua. And I think really they need to sort out their defence and their goalkeeper. They've cycled through so many goalkeepers this season. I think they really just need to settle on one and then try and get a settled back line as well, because they've conceded 59 goals this season, which is just not good enough if you're going to win a title. And it doesn't matter how many goals you score if you're going to have got games where you're going to concede three goals to teams like Yokohama FC. So, yeah, they've got a lot of work to do next season, but you'd expect them to be a lot higher in the table next year in a lot more of a normal season.
Yeah, most heavily. Well, that's what I was going to come on to and ask you next, Sam. What are the possibilities? What is the likelihood that F. Marinos could be next season's Kawasaki, a wounded beast that wants to get their title back? And what sort of overhaul? How much tinkering would they have to do to their squad to construct a juggernaut like Kawasaki have put together and that has seen them take the league by storm this season? We know their attack is lethal. We know Ange Postecoglou's methods bear fruit because they won the league last season, and they'll be smarting after finishing ninth this year. But I mean, they're one of only two teams to score more goals than Kawasaki's goal difference, so we know there's an attacking force in there, and they've shown that over the last two seasons. But yeah, I don't know if you can pick out a name or a defender they could bring in, a goalkeeper they could bring in that would shore them up from day one. Or yeah, the main areas of concern for you are centre back and goalkeeper, or is it all the way across the defence?
Well, I'd say like holding midfield as well, I think, is a little bit of an issue. I don't think Ogihara has played particularly well this season. I don't think necessarily Kida can do everything himself, but they've got Watanabe in there that maybe can come in and do that role. So that'd be interesting. Goalkeeper is definitely an issue. There's an interesting name that is now available where Avispa Fukuoka haven't extended the contract of Cervantes,
their
terrific Spanish goalkeeper. So I'd be looking at him if I was F. Marinos or any J-League team, really. I think he's a terrific player and would be a really good pickup. And he definitely still can play the way that Postecoglou wants to play, but he's a very good shot stopper as well. So, yeah, that would be the name I'd be picking out. The two centre-backs, Thiago Martins is pretty decent, and Hatanaka can be if he's focused. So they might not necessarily look to change either of them, but I think the backup could be improved. I think Makito Ito, when he's had to step in, he's not been good enough. So I'd look for maybe a more of a backup centre-back, the first-choice goalkeeper, and a first-choice holding midfielder. I'm trying to think of a name that comes to mind. Yeah, I'm not really sure. You might have to come back to me on that, but those would be the areas I'd look at.
Yeah, fair enough. Or it's going to be fascinating to see how they bounce back in 2021, because, we'd expect them to be up and around the ACL places. In a normal season, this was, different for so many reasons, of course, but ultimately they finished where they finished, and that's at ninth, the very definition of mid-table, the defending champions. All right, so three games to go. There was an away win for Sapporo at Urawa, Consadole winning 2-0 over Reds after a goalless first half. Anderson Lopez curled a shot against the bar 5 minutes after the restart for the visitors. Then 2 minutes later, ex-Reds man Yoshiaki Komai slid home a composed finish after Lopez's incisive ball across the box. Just past the hour, Takanori Sugano tipped over a blast from Kenyu Sugimoto, who later fired a loose ball over, but Consadole wrapped up the points with 5 minutes left when Shunta Tanaka curled in a superb first-time shot from just outside the box. So Reds finished 10th after no wins in their final five league games, and Sapporo 12th. I think obviously it's a good way to finish the season for Sapporo, their manager Misha Petrovic against his former club. But I think both of these two teams, Sam, they just wanted the season to be over. And, Reds can start again under Ricardo Rodriguez. And, Sapporo have at least finished the season on a decent run of form.
Yeah, I mean, Sapporo, I think they've been a little bit better for the last few games. They had that good start with Suzuki scoring all the goals, then they really tailed off a lot of the middle of this season, and really I think their squad is a lot better than a team to finish 12th in the league. So, but there is still a good basis there. I think they've brought a few through a few youngsters. Tanaka, who scored the goal, has been very good. Plays either in the, at the back line or plays in midfield. Takamine is another one. So there are good players there. They do need a few additions. Shindo leaves a bit of a gap at the back that they might want to fill. And I think they need to find an out-and-out goal scorer, because although Bothroyd and Lopez do decent enough jobs, I mean, Bothroyd's getting on a bit now in his late 30s, and I don't know if you can always rely on Anderson Lopez to be a consistent finisher. So, yeah, there are a few areas that they need to look into, but the basis of their squad is pretty decent. So once Chana tips back, I'd expect them, and they'd expect from themselves, to have a bit of a better season next year.
Most definitely, and yeah, Reds supporters probably want to just forget this season ever happened. So we'll move on. We'll move on from them. Yeah, the other two games we've got to review were both drawn. One was the Kyushu Derby down in Saga, where Tosu hosted Oita. Just past the half hour, Daiki Watari put to visiting Trinita ahead when he curled a low shot inside Park Il-gyu's far post. But 4 minutes after the break, Tomoya Koyomatsu equalised for Tosu with a cheeky flick from Shinya Nakano's driven cross. In the 78th minute, Yamato Machida put Oita back in front. And what a way to celebrate his 31st birthday it was. His first touch killed a lofted cross in from the left from Rei Matsumoto. And his second was a volley on the swivel that flashed past Park for his first J1 goal. But Trinita's lead was again short-lived. Tosu super sub Daichi Hayashi putting a bow on his breakout top flight season with a cool near-post finish in the 82nd minute. So at the end of the day, Sam, Tosu have ended up 13th and Oita 11th. Oita will be very satisfied, I'm sure, with that result coming off their obviously impressive first season back in the top flight last year. And Tosu, we've mentioned him obviously many times in the past couple of months and a lot at the start of this podcast as well. 13th is an excellent return from them, considering where they were a couple of months ago. And well, we've talked about some impressive youngsters, not only from Tosu but from other clubs in recent episodes. But yeah, I really like the look of Shinya Nakano from these highlights, at least. I haven't seen a lot of him, to be perfectly frank, but how much have you seen of him? He definitely looks like a player that could play a big part in Tosu's future.
Yeah, he's looked very well, very good, actually. He's not played too much. I mean, Yuta Uchida has really been their main left-back, so Nakano has kind of filled in for the last maybe 6 weeks or so of the season. He's only 17, and I mean, it just goes to show that they're not afraid to put in youngsters at Tosu, and he's looked, yeah, he looks like he's got a lot of potential. He's not afraid to go forward. He's looks like he's got very good technique. He's got a decent delivery and shot on him as well, and I mean, he can only get better at 17, and you might see a lot of these sorts of players next season at Tosu. Obviously, their finances are not great, so you imagine that some of the more established names might be leaving next year just to kind of balance the books a little bit. So it's going to be a very young team that I think takes to the field next season for Tosu, but they can be kind of happy in the knowledge that they've got players like Nakano coming through. Hopefully, they can keep hold of Matsuoka. Then Higuchi, we've mentioned before. Honda's been good. Ishii's been good. There's, yeah, a lot of good talent at Tosu. So, yeah, it's not all bad news for them. And, really looking forward to seeing what sort of squad is assembled next year. And if it's going to be difficult for them with the four relegated places. You'd probably put both of these teams in as candidates to possibly go down. Just as well as Tosu have played, you just don't know how they're going to be able to, what sort of squad they can put together next year. And Oita, their season was mainly, they wanted to establish themselves back as a J1 club, and they've done that. They started the season quite poorly. I was quite annoyed with them for a large part of the opening of the season for the way they were playing, but they kind of got their act together and really were a very solid mid-table team. They've got to see who they can keep hold of. Going back to Yokohama, I've seen links for Tomoki Iwata to go to F. Marinos, which would be a very good signing for them. I imagine he'd play more as an advanced right-back than right of a back three there, and it could be the kind of move that he needs, but it's not a great one for Oita because he's kind of one of the very few standout players there. And Oita have also, they've released a lot of players, so it looks like maybe they've had a few financial issues. So those two teams just to see what sort of squads they can assemble next year. And they, if it goes a little bit awry for them, they could be relegation fodder.
Yeah, so many interesting subplots to look forward to ahead of 2021. And these two clubs are most definitely to watch. And they'll obviously be joined by Vispa Fukuoka in 2021, making it three Kyushu teams in the top flight for, I believe, the first time ever. So that will be fascinating. And no doubt the J-League's PR departments, their minds are already spinning about what sort of a derby creations they can create for next season. So that's another thing to look forward to for next year. All right, the final game that we have to review from the 2020 J1 season. Unfortunately, we haven't saved the best till last, listeners. It was the game that between teams at kickoff entered in 16th and 17th in the table, and they ended it in 17th and 18th after a 0-0 draw. It was a Sendai hosting Shonan. In what can we say about it? In the 20th minute, visiting Belmari went close to taking the lead when Temba Matsuda's 25-yard shot came back off the post. And then after chances at both ends, it all came down to Shun Nagasawa finding himself free in the box in second half stoppage time. But Shonan player of the season, keeper Kosei Tani, who had been out of the team in the last few weeks, he got out well to smother the big man's shot, meaning that, Vegalta didn't finish at the foot of the table, but they went an entire season without a home win, managing only 7 draws and 10 defeats. But yes, their recent away wins at Oita and Shimizu meant they finished 17th, and Shonan ultimately ended up bottom on 27 points, a point behind both S-Pulse and Vegalta. So, yeah, talking about relegation fodder for 2021, Sam, these two are most definitely front and centre. Obviously, I mean, Sendai had made themselves into escape artists in the past few years, so do you think there's a possibility that a new manager could kind of get them back up towards the mid-table respectability, or are they ultimately, with the squad they've got, are they doomed to be fighting a relegation battle in 2021?
I think with this squad and a different manager and with the threat of relegation, I think they had enough about them in the squad to get out of this trouble. I don't know whether just the lack of incentive to do so has kind of gone with that. And then they've had a lot of injuries this season as well. Like, key players like Isaac Cuenca missed so much of the season. So you wonder if he was available, as he will be next season, hopefully, for them. I don't think it's been confirmed that he's staying on. But if they can keep him, if they can keep Guedes, then there's decent players in this squad. But they're going to lose a few. I mean, Slovic has already, that's been confirmed that he is leaving. And Shimao Mate, I think, has also been confirmed to leave. So those are key players. And if Tegumura is going to come in to sort this squad out, he's got a real job on his hands if you're losing key players like that. So I really expect Sendai to be right in the thick of things next season for relegation. And Belmari as well, they've got a lot of good young players. Good news for them that Tani signed on for another loan spell next season, but Mitsuki Saito's leaving, you'd imagine Kaneko will leave as well, probably a few others. I mean, they've brought back Wellington. I mean, he was back there a few years back. He's been around the block a bit. I don't know what he's going to offer next season. And it might be an interesting front two with him and Tarek El-Yunusi. But I don't think Wellington has ever established himself as a J1 striker. I think he's done well at J2 level, but not really scored the goals needed in J1. So, yeah, I'd worry about both of these teams next season.
Good Lord. Well, I hadn't heard that news about Slowik. That's, that's devastating for Sendai. All right. Well, yeah, I hate to finish part two on a downer like that. But, yeah, it has been a very rough season for Vegalta and Shonan as well, of course. But they ultimately live to fight another day, as there's, as we all know, no relegation in the J League in 2020. All right, well, they are all nine games from match day 34 reviewed. So we'll take another quick break, and then we'll let you know what's coming up in the Emperor's Cup in the next week or so, as well as, of course, hand out our final three Players of the Season award, and maybe wrap up and put a bow, if you like, on the 2020 J1 season. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back. So Kawasaki and Gunma Osaka have qualified for the semi-finals of the Emperor's Cup, which will be played on December 27th. The J1 teams are kept apart in the draw, with the Frontale to face either J3 champions Akita or Fukuyama City from the Hiroshima Prefecture League, and Gunma are set to meet either J2 champions Tokushima or JFL side Honda FC, with those are quarterfinals to be played on Wednesday. And Sam, from the green room, I know which side you have a soft spot for remaining in the Emperor's Cup.
Yeah, absolutely, Fukuyama City. I've spent a little bit, maybe 3 or 4 days in Fukuyama. It's kind of just outside Hiroshima, and I had that as my base to go and visit Hiroshima, and it was a really nice place, actually. There's a nice castle I went around, and a couple of museums there as well. It was a really interesting place, actually. It was not somewhere I'd ever heard of before, but yeah, it was conveniently located and a nice little find. So yeah, I'll definitely be supporting Fukuyama City FC as they reach the Asian Champions League.
Well, I was going to ask you whether, they had an ACL license, but I guess we'll cross that bridge when they come to it. It's been, a remarkable rise. We were trying to work out, again, in the green room, what tier of Japanese football the Hiroshima Prefecture League is in. We reckon it's at least the fifth, possibly even the sixth tier. So it's remarkable to see Fukuyama City make it this far. So look out, Akita. Of course, there are plenty of people in Akita's corner. They do have the best mascot in all of the J-League. So, you can't really lose, listeners, if you check out this game on Wednesday night. J3 champions Akita versus Hiroshima Prefecture League team Fukuyama City. Sam is definitely in the Fukuyama's corner, but, whichever way you slice it, it should be an absolute cracker with, a clash against Kawasaki on the line. So it's going to be fantastic. The final, of course, as is traditional in the Emperor's Cup, it will be played at the new National Stadium on New Year's Day. All right, Sam, so we've got a bit of business to take care of before we finish and finally wrap up the 2020 J1 season. We have three more Player of the Season awards to hand out. And, it's worked out very well that, the three teams we have left are the teams that finished first to third in the table. So I think over recent weeks, we were kind of anticipating that the Nagoya Player of the Season award would be a fairly routine one and a fairly easy choice. As regular listeners know, we have been waxing lyrical about Mateus on a very regular basis this season. He's appeared in every game. Mateus started all but one, scored 9 goals, but basically he's just been at the heart of everything Nagoya do going forward. But then, finding out that Grampus have kept a clean sheet in half of their league games. We already had Mitch Langerak and Yuichi Maruyama. Langerak, of course, the goalkeeper, and Maruyama, the captain and centre-back rock of the team, down as our other two nominees. But, we don't want to take anything away from Mateus, Sam, but I think this clean sheet record is making us reassess things.
Yeah, it's definitely, as you said, we were pretty set on Mateus for a long time, and I still might be swung that way. I'm not really sure yet. We still haven't made up my decision, but Langerak has been fantastic. I mean, he is, I don't think there's much question that he's the best goalkeeper in the league. He makes very good saves. He's commanding in his area. I mean, you heard when there were no crowds in there, all you could hear in a Nagoya game was Langerak barking out instructions. So he gets his defence very well organised in front of him. Yeah, he's just a terrific goalkeeper, and that record, you can't look past that record, really. It's for a goalkeeper to have half the season with clean sheets is pretty fantastic. So I mean, it's a difficult one. I think it's between him and Mateus, because we shouldn't take away from the way Mateus has played this season. And with the players that they've got going forward, really it's just a reliance on Mateus. So he's been the one that's got Nagoya to the where they are in the table in terms of the attacking output from him. So, yeah, it's a really difficult one. And Maruyama as well, I mean, he's been fantastic. As I think I mentioned earlier, the way that he kind of... He's the kind of the one that kind of guides Nakatani along a little bit in defence. He's always in the right position. He's, yeah, really well organised back there, makes some key interceptions and blocks. So, yeah, very good players. And before we move on, Inagaki as well, I want to mention in midfield. I thought at the start of the season that was a perfect signing for Fikadenti because he's the player that just does the dirty work. He's there, he's just... a bit of a nuisance for the opposition. He'll make tackles. He'll just, yeah, always in the right place. And even going forward, as we saw him hit the crossbar against Hiroshima, yeah, he's got a lot about him. So I really like Inagaki, but I'm going to hand it back to you because I'm still between Langerak and Mateus. So which side of the fence are you going for?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Inagaki there, but I'm actually, I'm going to have to stall for you, Sam, because I was just about to say that I don't think I'm Switzerland here. I don't think I can be neutral in this decision because, I mean, I have a foot in the Langerak camp. Of course, he's an Australian international, and Yuichi Maruyama is, for some strange reason, one of my favourite FC Tokyo players there ever have been. I really rated him and I was really disappointed when he left the club. So to see him have the success he has had, the impact he's had on Nagoya and establish himself as the captain and the rock of the centre of their defence is something that I hoped that he would have been doing for FC Tokyo. So, I hope I've given you 90 seconds or so to stall and make your proper decision because I'm not sure I can do it. I think if you set a record like that 17 clean sheet, I think if you keep a clean sheet in half of your games, I think you've probably got to get it. But if you want to give it to Mateus, I will absolutely understand because, as we've just both said, yeah, he was our pick for basically since we started doing this. Mateus was one of the easiest choices we thought we had to make. But ultimately, I think the record swings it for Langerak, but I'm happy to go with Mateus if you'd prefer to.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. I would say that Langerak has not put a foot wrong all season. He's been so consistent, and I can't think off the top of my head any sort of error he's made. And Mateus, although he's been fantastic, the last few games, I mean, he's not really come to the fore when Nagoya really needed someone to drive them over the line. Even in this last game, even with the blonde hair that he went for that you thought might be the game changer, he wasn't quite on it. So I think the last few games have swung it for Mitch Langerak, but really tight call.
Okay, so I think we'll give it to Langerak then, and we'll give Mateus his kudos, and he probably will feature in our team of the season that is going to come up very shortly. But yeah, Langerak just swings it, and congratulations, Mitch, and well done to you and your entire defence. That of course, includes Maruyama. And so well done, and we look forward to seeing your impact on the ACL as well as the J1 in 2021. Well done, Mitch. All right, okay, so I think, we have had some easy decisions along the way, Sam. I think the easiest one of all in J1 in 2020 is handing out the Player of the Season award to a Gumba Osaka player. We're going with the three nominees that Johnny Nicol gave us a couple of weeks ago. So they are Yosuke Itaguchi, very exciting central midfielder, of course, for Gumba, who has returned to the club and made a huge impact. 26 appearances for him, 25 starts before his season was ended by injury after match day 26. Four goals for Itaguchi. Patrick was perhaps for some a surprise inclusion from Johnny, but ultimately I think he's justified it. He's ended up making 33 appearances, only 15 starts, but 9 goals for the big man, including goals in 3 straight games before Saturday when both Patrick and Gumba, of course, fired a blank at home against Shimizu. But, it's the easiest choice of the lot, I think, isn't it, Sam? Masaaki Higashiguchi between the sticks for Gumba. I mean, the record is 8 clean sheets. It's not as good, obviously, on paper as Nagoya, but the amount of key saves that Higashiguchi has made to bail Gumba out time and time again has just been absolutely phenomenal. And, well, we do have a difficult decision, I think, perhaps between these two. Jakub Slavik is obviously a decent shout as well, but the goalkeeper for the team of the season is a really tough one, but there's no question at all, is it, that Masaaki Higashiguchi is Gumba's player of the season.
No, he's been absolutely incredible. I mean, he's been put to work a bit more than Langerak has. So I think the defence in front of him has chopped and changed a little bit. It's not quite been as settled. It's conceded a lot more chances. But yeah, so many times he's bailed his team out with fantastic saves. All sorts of saves, reaction saves, just conventional saves. The way he handles his area as well. He's just kind of been a very terrific all-round goalkeeper this season. Him and Langerak have been... yeah, fantastic. I don't know how we're going to split them again when we come on to it later. But yeah, I think Higashiguchi, head and shoulders, has been Gamba's best player. I think Idaguchi, I really think he's had a fantastic season, considering his ill-fated moves to Leeds and Cultural Leonessa and wherever else he was in Europe. It didn't work for him. Even at we came back at the end of last season. I didn't think he looked a great player either at the end of last season. But this year, he's back to the sort of player that we know he can be and he was prior to the 2018 World Cup. So, yeah, terrific season for him. It's a shame it's been curtailed by injury. But maybe he can fight his way back for the Emperor's Cup. I'm not sure. And Patrick, I think... just kind of his contribution towards the end of the season. He scored very key goals for them. He kind of dragged his team through a few games with Adam Ilson and all the nonsense that was going on with him. And Usami's had a few injuries and there have been injuries elsewhere. So he's been the catalyst for them going forward. But yeah, I don't think there's any argument that Higashiguchi is their player of the season.
All right, so the J-League released a list of 33 names, Sam, for contenders for the best 11, and Gumba only had two names on that, two out of 33, for the team that finished second in the table, Higashiguchi and Idaguchi. So is there anybody else who you think might have been an unsung hero for Gumba this season, or were they just... I don't know, it feels strange to talk about a team that finished second as better than the sum of their parts, but have they just clicked over this season? There haven't been too many standouts that are worthy of an honour, like being awarded a spot in the best 11?
No, I mean, really, no, there haven't been too many standouts. Not really that have played the full season either. They've had a lot of young players that have come in as the season's gone on, and they've performed very well, but not really necessarily, you'd say, to Team of the Year standards. I think you might have an argument for Kurata to be as a nominee. I don't think he'd ever get into it, but maybe he's one of the best 33, I'm not sure. But like players like Usami... it can be fantastic, but I don't think he's been consistent enough. So they've kind of rotated around who's going to be playing well at any given point. So I do think that they're correct in only selecting Higashiguchi and Idaguchi as the two players that have been consistently good all season that deserve their place in that list. So, yeah, I think it's not always that they do this, but I think they've got it right this time.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, so only two Gumba players on that list, but a remarkable 13 out of 33 from the champions Kawasaki. But you can't argue with a single one of them. And obviously, yeah, we would have had a very hard time going through their championship winning squad and picking just three names out. So as we did with Gumba and Johnny's three names, we went with the three that Neil Debnam gave to us a short while ago on the podcast, Sam. And I did check in with Neil late last week that he was still happy with the three names that he gave us. And he said that he was. I mean, but obviously you could name basically anybody in their, in their first 11. But I mean, 13 of them have made this final list. So, I guess with... honourable mentions in terms of the number of goals they've scored this season, at least, to Yu Kobayashi and Leandro Damião, 14 goals and 13, respectively, for their regular men up front. But, yeah, they have not cracked the list. Yeah, so many names. I mean, Ianaga's got into double figures in goals as well this season, past weekend, hasn't he? But so many different names. But ultimately, the three that Neil gave us and the three that we'll go with are Kaoru Mitoma, who made 30 appearances, only 11 starts. Can you believe it, Sam? 13 goals. He wasn't in the squad between match days 2 and 4. He didn't score until match day 7 at home against Urawa, and then scored on his first start at home versus Oita in match day 9. So before we come on to the other two names, I mean, obviously we've spoken about Mitoma so much this season, but if you can cast your mind back, when did you realise we had something special on our hands here? Because Mitoma's basically put together the best debut season that I can remember in J1, and he's done it in just 11 starts.
Yeah, well, really, he wasn't the first choice at all at the start of the season, and I wonder what would happen if Tatsuya Hasegawa didn't get injured, because he had that left wing berth pretty nailed down. He was playing really well, and it was kind of, Mitoma was stuck on the bench, really, but, I mean, he was fantastic when he came on in that game for Hasegawa. But I think the first game he started that I really noticed him was the League Cup tie, actually, against Kashima. He was absolutely incredible. He was just... I think we've mentioned this before, there's not many players that we see that just kind of give that excitement every time they get the ball. And it's like when I was watching Takefusa Kubo again for Tokyo, when he got the ball, you always expected something to happen. And, I mean, this was his rookie season. You'd think he'd been playing in this league for 5 years. I mean, he just took to it so well. I mean, he's so confident with his dribbling ability, the way he goes past players, the way he can link up with them. He's just kind of untouchable, the way he dribbles the ball. And no matter what he does, it seems to always stick with him, and the defender can't get it off him. And so many times we've seen him get to the byline and cut it back and set up goals that way. I mean... that game, he was just absolutely incredible. And then, really, he became like a main player for them that season, for the rest of the season. You mentioned he didn't have that many starts, but it was always that he'd come on at half-time against a slightly tired defence, and then at the start of the second half, they'd just rip through teams, and it was all coming through him. So, I mean, not many players, I don't think, have taken the league by storm in the way that Mitoma has. And, yeah, I mean, absolute joy to watch.
So, do you have any concerns that he might be able to make the grade over in Europe? I mean, he stated that it's his desire to want to go and play overseas. Would he need to be accommodated in a system similar to the one Kawasaki plays, or has he shown enough for you this season, in literally one season, in just over 10 starts, that, I mean, he'll be adaptable enough to play in any sort of system wherever he goes and tries to play his trade abroad?
I do think he would need to be in a team that's quite offensive-minded. I'm not really convinced that he's going to be playing as a tracking back winger that's going to go back and make tackles. I don't think that's really his game, and that's sort of an issue that Kubo has faced this season at Villarreal, where he's had to do a bit more defensive work. It's not really suited him, and he's not really getting the game time that maybe he hoped. So it would have to be a wise move that Mitoma made if he was to go to Europe. I think... as with every sort of Japanese player, the kind of stereotypical issue that they face is he physically capable of matching up to European defences? Maybe in places like Belgium and Holland, I think he'd be quite suited, maybe Portugal as well. But then when you go to La Liga, or if you go to England, or if you go to maybe the Bundesliga as well, it's a little bit more difficult. So it would be a difficult adaptation for him, but he's got all the quality in the world. And I think with the right manager, the right setup, I think, yeah, he can be a success in Europe. There's no reason why he can't be.
All right, then. Yeah, so we look forward to, well, Kawasaki supporters hope they get at least another half a season of Mitoma before he zips abroad, but we'll wait and see what happens. Mitoma, obviously one of the 13 Frontale players in the 33-man, not quite short list, but list for the J1 Best 11, as are our other two nominees, provided to us, of course, by Neil Debnam. The second of those is Al Tanaka, regular in the central midfield for the champions. He made 31 appearances, 23 starts, 5 goals, and always a good delivery from set pieces as well from Tanaka, including the assist for Akihiro Ienaga's headed goal that was Frontale's first of their win at Kashiwa on Saturday. And the other, the third nominee is Jeziel, the centre-back, of course. He played in 9 of the 11 games that Frontale kept a clean sheet in this season. And, he's really developed this season into a rock at the heart of the Frontale defence. So, just the final numbers, Sam. Obviously, Junsung Ryong made it as one of the 4 goalkeepers in the 33-man list for the J1 Best 11. Jeziel was one of 4 Kawasaki defenders. So, basically, they're regular 4 across the back of Jeziel and Taniguchi in the centre. Nobori Zato and Yamane, the fullbacks, also made the list. And, 6 midfielders, as well as the 2 men up front, Kobayashi and Leandro Damião. So, Tanaka and Jeziel, well and truly worthy nominees after terrific seasons for the pair of them.
Yeah, terrific, both of them. I mean, I'm still fielding a few issues from the Ryota Oshima Appreciation Society from not including him in this. They're pretty angry, but Tanaka has been fantastic. Him and Morita and Oshima and pretty much whoever they put in midfield, they've all played really well. I mean, he was Young Player of the Year last season. He's just kind of adapted his game a little bit more. He goes forward a little bit more than he did last year. He's a bit more expressive. He's getting a few more goals. Just looks a really good all-round player, and still, he's only 20. And he's only going to improve, and just looks a terrific player. And then Jesse, I think if you were asking me who is the most important player in this squad, I'd say it's Jeziel. I just think, especially when they have not really got other centre backs beside him and Taniguchi, but the way he has played, he's just so in control, except for when him and Taniguchi had gone on a bit of a night out, I think, after they'd sealed the title in that game against Shimizu, where they were all over the place. But other than that, I mean, you can't get past Jeziel, really. As a one-on-one defender, I don't think there's anyone better in the league. I think it's just general positioning is so good. And it's not like he's just a defender. He's able to play the ball out as well. He's never looks in... It never looks out of control in possession, and just he's got everything about him. He's a terrific defender, and I don't think he's going to get the MVP, but if I was running the awards, I'd be putting him right up there, because I think he's been absolutely superb.
Okay, so there's no question we've spoken about Mitoma the most of any Kawasaki player this season, Sam, and as you know, and regular listeners know, I'm more a highlight watcher. For me, it's Mitoma. But if you think Jeziel's their most important player, is he their player of the season?
I think I'd still give it Mitoma. I just wanted to give Jeziel his credit, because I think he's been superb. And there is an argument to say, if they didn't have Jeziel, would they win the league? Because without him at the back, there's not a lot else coming in behind. And you could argue that without Mitoma, there are still very good players in his position. But I just think the impact that he has had, it is, as I said before, it's unlike anyone else I've really seen, at least any Japanese player coming into the league in his first season, just being so unplayable when he's at his best. I think just he's an incredible player to watch. I think that goal against Yokohama a few weeks ago, when he ran the length of the pitch and then teed up Kobayashi, I just thought, it's incredible. And there are not many players in the league that can do what he does. So, as good as, and I really like Jesse, I think it has to be Kairo Mitoma.
All right, then. So Mitoma completes the set, then, of our J1 Players of the Season, a player from each J1 club that we started a few weeks ago. And, I've really enjoyed threshing out with you, Sam. We've had the odd disagreement here and there, but, that's always it's always healthy, isn't it, debate between friends. So, absolutely fantastic. And, all of these players fully deserve their awards, I believe. And the list of 33 for the J1 player of Best 11, Sam, do you have any outliers in your team of the season? You've put together a team for us that, yeah, you would like to take on the aliens with. So without any further ado, yeah, would you like to go from back to front and tell us, yeah, maybe as well you can elaborate on some of the more difficult decisions you had in putting this team together?
Yeah, first one, it's between Higashiguchi and Langerak. I think both goalkeepers have been fantastic. I think Higashiguchi, as we mentioned before, is just the one that's bailed out his team a little bit more, but you can't go against the record that Langerak has. So as the slightly better goalkeeper, in my opinion, and just for 17 clean sheets, I don't think I can go against Mitch Langerak as my goalkeeper. It's such a tight call. Throughout the season, I've kind of had this in my mind, this team that I'm trying to build, and it's kind of fluttered between the two all season. But yeah, I think Langerak has just about snatched it at the end, so I think he'd be my goalkeeper. I mean, would you agree with that, or would you be more Higashiguchi?
Yeah, probably before the weekend, I probably would have thought that we would just have to give it to Higashiguchi. I guess it depends on your criteria. Is it the MVP? Is it the best goalkeeper in terms of his shot stopping? Because in terms of his value to his team, I would argue that Higashiguchi has been more important, yeah, to Gumba than Langerak has been to Grampus. But is Langerak the best goalkeeper in J1? Yes, he is. So I guess he probably has to get it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it could go either way. Yeah. I'm sure it'd be debated by everyone on Twitter if I release this and get my tin hat ready for Gamba supporters to go at me, or vice versa if I went the other way. But yeah, terrific goalkeepers. Moving into the back line, I've got right back Miki Yamane. I think he's been absolutely fantastic. He came in from Shonan, didn't really play right back for Shonan, but has developed into a really consistent player. I mean, it's been such a difficult one for Kawasaki to replace El Senior. They hadn't really managed it before this, but Yamane has made that position his own. He just looks fantastic. And I've got Jesiel alongside him. I've said everything I need to say, I think, about Jesiel. Terrific player. In my opinion, the best defender in the league. And I think it'd be a fantastic partnership with him and Yuichi Maruyama, who I've got next to him. I think he's led Nagoya superbly, as we've mentioned before. And I've got two Nagoyas on the left-hand side. I've got Yoshida as my left-back. I think this was a slightly more difficult decision. And Nagato could have been in there, and Noborizato as well, so there are options. But I think Yoshida just offers a little bit going forward as well as defensively. I think he's been a consistent J-League player for a while with Tosu and then with Nagoya. And I just think just edges it. I don't think it's the strongest position in this squad, but yeah, I've really liked Yoshida for a long while, so just give it the edge to him. Any disagreements from you there?
No, I think that's great, and I think as a back four, and indeed working alongside Langerak, I think that would that's absolutely perfectly made to take on the aliens. I don't think they'll know what's hit them.
Well, yes, yeah, absolutely, man. A clean sheet guaranteed. The decisions don't get much easier going into midfield, and as much as I want to put Ryota Oshima in there, and as much as I think he's the best midfielder in the league, I'm going to have to take him out just because he hasn't played enough games. He's injured right at the end, and it's a real shame because I love Ryota Oshima, as everybody knows. But I'm going to take him out. I think Idiguchi is the first one who's absolutely nailed on in this. I think the way that he's played this season has been fantastic. He's back to his best. And he could be that kind of jack-of-all-trades midfielder that does all the dirty work when necessary but can go forward. And alongside him, I'm going to bow to you and FC Tokyo and get Shuto Abe in there. I think he does deserve his place in this team. This is his first real season, but to be honest, he's taken over that Tokyo midfield and he's got them to sixth. I think there's little around him, especially after Hashimoto left. So I think he's a terrific player. He just keeps getting better every time I see him. And yeah, there's arguments for other players in there. I think Inagaki could get in there. It wouldn't be the most fashionable of choices, but he's a terrific player. And then you could always look at Kashima's midfielders in Leo Silva and Misao. But I think it's kind of been a real breakout campaign for Abe. So, yeah, I'm quite happy to have him and Idiguchi in midfield. And would you be looking for Takahagi in there, maybe? Or
No, well, I very much appreciate you slotting Abe in there. Obviously, you could you take your pick of the Kawasaki centre mids that aren't named at Oshima. But for Abe, hopefully he gets to listen to this and gets a buzz off it, because he didn't make the 33 man list. But good to get him some recognition. I concede that there'll be plenty of supporters of other teams campaigning for their players to take this position. But I don't mind taking your helping hand there, Sam, and putting Shuto Abe in. So that's very gracious of you. And I obviously think he's deserving of it as well, but supporters of other teams would probably plump for some other people. So what's your formation? Are you going four across midfield to leave you with the two big men up front, or how you're attacking things?
Yeah, I have to go 4-4-2 with the two strikers I want in there. And this is a really difficult one as well, because the two kind of wide players, you could have Kiyotake, we've mentioned, Sakamoto. I think even Matsuo could have got in there if he'd maybe continued for the rest of the season. But yeah, I can't look past the two I'm picking. Mitoma, I think, has to be on the left-hand side. I think he's been absolutely terrific, as we've mentioned. And then Mateus, who lost out in the Nagoya vote, I think he has to be there, and I've got him coming in off the right hand side. I think, yeah, good luck to any defence that has to deal with those two out wide.
Yeah, absolutely, cannot argue with that at all. Yeah, they're well and truly deserving of their spots, and all that's left to do is whack the two big men up front, and then it's game over.
Yeah, I don't think there's any surprise here. There is Michael Olunga, 28 goals for the season. Just absolutely incredible season for him. Yeah, absolutely terrific. And then if you put him alongside Everaldo, who is fast becoming my favourite player in the league, I think you've got an incredible strike force. They would combine so well. I think Everaldo is a better player than Olunga, but Olunga's 28 goals, you can't really look past those. So, yeah, I think they're my front two, and I don't think there's anyone else I'd put anywhere close to them, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, they've just head and shoulders the two best forwards, the two best strikers in J1 this season, most definitely. And I'd just like to put on record there that Sam's opinion is not necessarily that of the J-Talk podcast. We don't want an international incident with Kenya, so we are massive fans of Michael Olunga. He may or may not be as good player as Everaldo. That's that's to be decided down the line. But most definitely, these two outstanding strikers take their spot in the J-Talk team of the season. We'll claim it, Sam. It's your handiwork, but we'll claim it as the J-Talk team of the season. And absolutely fantastic lineup. No questions asked. Yeah, some very difficult decisions along the way, but I reckon you've nailed it, mate. And all that's left to do then is to crown the J-Talk J1 player of the season for 2020, Sam. There's obviously a lot of names we could mention in the honourable mention category, but I believe it basically just comes down to a race in two between the best player from the best team this season, Kaoru Mitoma from Kawasaki Frontale, and far and away the top scorer in the league, Michael Olunga from Kashiwa Reysol. So it's a tricky one. It's in J1 history, usually the champion team, the best player from them, is usually awarded the player of the season, but rarely have we seen a player with a weight of goals like Olunga. So it's a difficult choice. Which way are you leaning? Obviously, we have to make a decision on this episode. This is the last episode of the J1 season. So where's your vote go?
Yeah, it is a difficult one. I thought the J-League, when they announced their results, they would have had Mitoma as part of the young player of the season category, but they've decided to cut that at 21, so they're going to have to make a decision like we are. I think across the season, though, Olunga has played pretty much every game. The goal record is fantastic, to score 28 goals for a team that's not necessarily up there as title contenders this season, not necessarily with the kind of players around him that Mitoma has. I think I would have to side with Olunga. It's nothing against Deck Mitoma, who, as we've said all along, has been fantastic this season, but only 11 starts. He's not played quite as much as Olunga. So, yeah, I think on the balance of it, Olunga, just it's been a phenomenal season. So he's a worthy winner, in my opinion. How about you?
Yeah, I have to go along with that. I mean, it's unprecedented territory here. A player from the team, a team that finished seventh in J1 has never won the Player of the Season award before. But I think, yeah, we have to make a special case here for Ilunga and reward his consistency throughout the season. Obviously, he picked up from where he left off in his phenomenal season in J2 last season. And, yeah, the weight of goals, the consistency, it all adds up to Ilunga for me. It's yeah, it's difficult to look past Mitoma, obviously, but the fact that Mitoma, as we said, talking about the Player of the Year with Frontale, only made 11 starts. I mean, goodness knows what sort of record he might have been able to put together if he had have started on a more regular basis. But Frontale basically didn't need him to do more than he did they? They were just a record-smashing machine themselves. So, okay, we'll make it official then. We'll rubber stamp it. Michael Ilunga is the 2020 Player of the Season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, full credit to him. What a terrific season. It was, I think it's just, as we went on throughout the season, Ilunga just scored every week, and it kind of just went by the by. Go, oh yeah, Ilunga scored again. So yeah, he really deserves some recognition for what has been a terrific goal scoring season.
All right then, so we've nailed the team of the season, we've nailed the player of the season, and we've both definitely nailed this season as a whole, Sam. What an incredible, well, I think it's an incredible achievement from us both, from Stuart and John on the Extra Time podcast, to make it through this season. Weeks and weeks where we had nothing to talk about, but we managed to pump out interesting episodes on a weekly basis. And yeah, once it got up and running again, there was no rest for the wicked. Obviously, you had to watch every single game, and you still found time to join us and yeah, share your knowledge on a weekly basis and all your thoughts and your opinions. And well, to say we couldn't have done it without you this season, mate, is, well, it absolutely goes without saying. So you deserve a break, and, yeah, put your head down for more than a short while. So what can I say, Sam? Thanks so much for officially coming on board as co-host this season. It's been a season that we'll never forget for many reasons, but, yeah, to have you along for the ride for the duration has just been absolutely outstanding. So, yeah, thanks for all the hard yards this year.
Well, thank you very much for that. It's been my pleasure. I mean, it gives me 2 hours or so each Monday to get away from whatever this year has been for everyone, just to talk about the J-League. Just, yeah, thanks to you for bringing me along. And the hard work that you put in, I think that goes unnoticed. The amount of work you do behind the scenes to get prepared for each podcast, to get everything out there, to come up with the stuff that we were doing before, during lockdown, when we were just scrummaging around for anything to talk about, you always had something there. The awards, I think all the good ideas come from you. So yeah, I think power of good that you've done for the J League community and the English community anyway. Since you started this podcast, it's just carried on this season. So yeah, it's great to be a part of it. So yeah, thank you very much for bringing me along.
An absolute pleasure, Sam. Yeah, it's been terrific, and I think you'd like to join me in thanking all the guests we've had along for the ride this season. Too numerous to name off the top of my head on an individual basis. I wouldn't want to start because then I'd end up leaving a couple out, and then I'd feel terrible about it. But Sam, yeah, we're only as good as our guests, aren't we? And I know we haven't had that many in the last couple of months of the season, basically because we didn't want anybody interfering with our players of the season choices. But, we're only as good as our guests, aren't we? And we appreciate all of them for making themselves available and, for talking much longer than I anticipate they ever will. So we do owe them a debt of gratitude, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. We have such good listeners, such good guests. I mean, yeah, they all bring something different to the podcast, all great to talk to. No one comes in here and is not a delight to spend a couple of hours with, or however long we do. Yeah, terrific knowledge that they all bring in. The whole community is just fantastic that goes around the J-League. As well as our guests, you've got all the people that write blogs for the various different teams across the league. They're all terrific reads. They're such a kind of collaborative spirit between everyone. Yeah, it's just really nice to be a part of. And yeah, thank you to absolutely everyone that's come on as a guest. You've definitely made this podcast better. No one necessarily wants to listen to me rabbit on for as long as I do.
Oh no, absolutely. That's very well said, Sam. But yeah, don't sell yourself short. It's been absolutely terrific from everyone involved this season. And of course, John and Stuart on the Extra Time pods as well. It's Yeah, it's been a mind-blowing season, but one that we're really proud of here at J-Talk Towers. So thanks for coming along for the ride, listeners. Obviously, there's still some Emperor's Cup business to take care of, and indeed the Levain Cup final on the 4th of January. So we will have a couple more podcasts for you before we finally put a bow on the 2020 J1 season, even as it stretches into the first few days of 2021. But we will leave it for now. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast, and indeed for the 2020 J1 season. Sam and I would like to thank all of our guests for their contributions throughout this season. Of course, we'd like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon, and we'd like to thank you, dear listener, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back again soon with a look at what's going on in the Emperor's Cup. But for now, put your feet up, listeners, and enjoy a little bit of time without J1. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.
Yes.